Last week, the Dow finished at another 120-plus year record. And of course, the cryptocurrency phenomenon is marching forward. To help discuss some of these topics and much more, Bob Hoy, strategist at institutionaladvisors.com. That's all one word. It's just a pleasure to have him back in rare form, I understand, today.
I decided I'd shave for the interview and make it all very proper.
We've seen the CRB index, the commodity index, breaking down in recent weeks, I think giving some hints or signals that maybe all is not well in the commodity sector. Of course, West Texas has been following that theme downward, and the metals have sagged a bit. Are you looking for a big sell-off?
We got the what we call our rotation rally for the industrial commodities. We had a rally out in March, and from lows, sort of November kind of. And indeed, we did get the rally, and that was it. It actually, some of them, like crude oil, peaked in late February. So then what has happened here is that if you look at the chart at the first of the year, the dollar index was down, the DX. And only one of them was up consistently, and that was gold, although it was a moderate rally. Silver, even more moderate. You know, base metals and crude oil headed down while the dollar was declining, which shows that those industrial commodities really are weak. So what we were looking for on the DX, that probably 96.5 would be the target, and quite likely it would hold, which it has. So, and our thought it might take about 5 or 6 weeks to complete a base in the U.S. dollar index. And it was more of a decline than a building a base. But nonetheless, the 96.5 held, and we had some technical excesses at the low. So the rally in the U.S. dollar could be quite significant. The first move is refreshing, and then a correction in here, and then the next leg up. So at times like this, it's best to review that the policymakers, their best thing is to have the dollar depreciation. And therefore, the worst thing that can happen for policymakers is that the dollar go up, and indeed it is. And you know, our long-term view on the U.S. dollar heading up for quite some time is based upon the fact that on previous post-bubble contraction, the senior currency has become chronically strong against most other currencies and most commodities. It's the feature of a long contraction following a bubble. And of course, with so many bubbles going on, which is the key bubble in at the time, we thought 2007 bubble was the key one because it had residential property up with it, like 1929. It had some firming, pretty good firming with commodity prices. Actually, it put in crude oil, of course, to 2008. It went crazy. And so we concluded that that had all of the signs of a classic bubble, from which the initial collapse was horrendous. Even the establishment noted that it was the worst contraction since the early 1930s. So, hey, this adds up, doesn't it, Chris? A bubble that looked like 1929, and then a contraction that looked like the 1930s. Then, of course, you've had the rebound in the stock market, now to record highs. And we've been taking this as the first bull market out of a classic crash. And now it's really pushed off a whole lot of technical signals. Sentiment and momentum numbers are exceptional. We had one on one stock the other day. I can't remember which one it was, but it gave upside exhaustion signals as well as sequential sell signals. The last time it did that was on March the 8th, 2000, at the height of that bubble. So the excesses are there, only found at cyclical peaks in the market, you know, at or near both. And there's another one that in the past with great bubbles, and this is now a great bubble, another one actually, they have a tendency in the past to have, in Europe and London, to have peaked in May or June. That doesn't matter whether it was the South Sea bubble in 1720 or the bubble of 1873. And on the 1873 bubble, the New York market was big enough to be important, but still you could consider it as an immature financial market, whereas London was the financial capital. So then you have this new phenomenon came in where London and Europe peaked in May or June, turned around through the summer months, and then New York got up and set a speculative high in September of 1873. And then something similar happened in 1929 when London and Europe peaked in May, and then New York turned around during the summer and then made the final high in September. Now, there's one other thing going on here. That on all of those bubbles in the past, like the South Sea bubble of 1720 and the huge bubble of 1825, they all were preceded by a long period of dynamic economic expansion that concluded with a huge blowout in commodities. So you had the high for commodities. I mean, we're talking about a generational high in 1711. Then the first stock bubble blew out in 1720. And 1825, it was 9 years earlier on that bubble. And even 1929, well, global commodities in 1920 really did go to the moon. And the crash in commodities in 21 was severe. It was so severe that the bankers at the Federal Reserve in the mid-20s, we were very concerned about commodities weakening. So the bank, the Fed was easy in monetary policy, concerned about weak commodities. And they didn't understand that the excess credit that might have gone into economic expansion or into commodities, it was time for inflation and financial assets, so the stocks and bonds became the game. So the Fed, in its ignorance, was providing lots of credit, hoping to boost commodity prices, and instead the public had chosen to speculate in stocks, so it added fuel to the fire. So here we are in the last number of years. They've been trying to get the CPI inflation above 2%, which, in a way, is saying commodity prices are too weak. And I just cut that, wrote down a headline about, this thing recently. So the Fed is doing much similar to what they were doing in the 1920s, trying to boost commodity prices when the action is in financial assets. And now, with the Trump phenomenon in the market, you've had a fabulous rally, and we could check that one out because, you know, October is often a month when if there's problems in the market or a bit of down or whatever, it can clear in October and then do the seasonal rally. Now, on our technical work on the S&P, that modest decline into there was gave us a springboard buy. So we thought, okay, now how far can this go? That was on November 3rd, so it was before the election. We thought it could go to around March, mainly because after November we figured, you know, that industrial commodities would rally anyway. So we got to March, and then there was a bit of a correction down into April, and it gave another springboard buy on the stock market. And I should ask Chris that this technical tool, springboard buy, it's designed to only give that signal in a rise when you're in an overall trend in the stock market that's either rising or flat. it doesn't do it as bear market. So anyways, we got the springboard buy in the middle of April and figured, okay, now when is the next high? Well, everybody knows it's going to be in May or June. And of course, with our historical stuff, we knew we had a very strong conviction that the market would run into June. So here's the way we work now is you've got the highs. As a matter of fact, I think I saw a storyline earlier today that in the month of June, you've had the S&P set 7 record highs. And you've got the technicals. So here's where you make a list and you say a checklist for a top. And question number one is the stock market up what it should be? Yes. The next question is, are there signs of speculative excess? Oh, measurably so. That's quite something. Then the third question is, how sound is the fundamental story behind the rally? Well, the fundamental story essentially has been that with the new administration, it's a pro-business administration, and whereas the previous administration was the most anti-business administration since President Wilson. So, yeah, that's the story. And the Trump phenomenon has also brought the public into the market. You can't have a major top in the market without the public getting in and the public are in. And it's funny, even central bankers are in because they really don't understand the meaning of a reserve for the currency, which the central bank should be focused on. Instead, they're practicing modern portfolio theory and trying to get the best return out of their reserve. It's totally insane. So they're long a lot of stocks, particularly the Swiss National Bank, as I read. So you've not only got the public in the stock market, but you've also got the central bankers in. You've had a really good dynamic action in the NASDAQ stocks, you know, the FANG. And I think it was on June 5th we came out with one on the high fires, and there was we had the representative one, and which was Microsoft, and then there was 100 lists of symbols below it that were doing the same sort of blow off, and so the Nasdaq, these high flyers, have had a correction. But what we're interested in, of course, is always the S&P or representing the broader market, or the NYA, which is the whole NYSE, rolling over. So here's our plan, Chris. Probably in the next week or so, the senior indexes, Dow and S&P, will take a correction as the NASDAQ already has. Then turn around to July, August. The New York market will probably take a run towards another high. Whether it makes it or not, it doesn't matter because it'd probably be the last rally of this bull market. There's now plenty of evidence around to say that this is a cyclical peak.
Bob, I'm not sure if you have access to your email. A few moments ago, I fired over a chart from Zero Hedge. Essentially, it has three currencies, okay? The king of currencies, the yellow metal. Bitcoin, its usurper, the newcomer to the field. And then there is sort of the curmudgeon in the middle, the U.S. dollar, okay? It's really quite an interesting juxtaposition between the three.
Oh, I guess maybe in the last 2 months we've published a chart on the Bitcoin with the big rallies and corrections numbers. And it's matching up with gold in 1980 or... I mean, if we wanted to, we could do it with RCA in 1929. So it's doing a classic parabolic blow-off, and it's amazing how close it is to gold in 1980. So how far it goes at this stage, we don't know, but it is a blow-off stock.
You know, it's interesting you'd say that because I was in that camp for quite some time. Technically, I'm looking at the chart as well. It's about as vertical as it can be. Or when you see a ram's horn, beware. And we saw that in Bitcoin back near the end of 1980, silver and gold. And you might even say many, many of the IPOs in the late 90s, early 2000s. But my only proviso this time is I actually have become something of a convert. in the crypto sphere, that we may still be around circa 1996 in the tulip days, if you will, before we reached the dot bomb. We were still dot com. Firstly, it looks as though, according to a lot of analysis, Bitcoin could consume about 10% of the $5 trillion Forex market, a $500 billion space. They're estimating 30% of that will go to Bitcoin. That's a $1.75 trillion market cap if you multiply by 10. If you adjust the current Bitcoin price, that's about 30 to 40 fold where we are today, which is right in line with Tim Draper, you know, the self-made billionaire VC venture capitalist in Silicon Valley. He's calling for a minimum of $100,000 Bitcoin. And I know that might sound a bit extreme, but he was also calling for $10,000 Bitcoin in 2018, and we're, you might say, one-third of the way there already. There are times when the crowd just gets carried away with itself. This could just be the first tulip in Holland where the mania starts to set in. I think the mistake, Bob, people are making is there's a 100 coin or cryptocurrency market out there, meaning that there's at least 100 at any given time that are alternatives to Bitcoin. They are climbing very rapidly, much faster than Bitcoin itself. I think we could have a full-fledged new .com/tulip mania on our hands here that could run another few years.
These are biological functions, huge growth curves. And when they get going, you just let them go. All we're doing is every once in a while we match it up with gold in on the way to 1980. And the matchups have been interesting and the corrections have been interesting. So I'll look at our last one on this kind of a speculative parabolic law. Anything's possible, and you really, this is where I have to agree with the establishment. You can't say a bubble could never call a bubble a bubble. They came in, and I think it was April of 1720, and the market is flying. But this is when there are a whole lot of new issues being done. And of course, money was flowing into the new issue. And the guys running the South Sea Company, which was essentially a quasi-government, they became apprehensive because there were a lot of options outstanding that they wanted to get exercised. So then they pushed, there was corruption between the South Sea Company and Parliament. So they pushed through a bill called the Anti-Bubble Act, which was to prevent other stocks from being floated. But by the time they got it in, it was too late anyway. So the government made every effort to keep the South Sea Company flying. And as I said, it went from 120 pounds to 1,000 pounds. I think it was about June the 20th or something like that, very close to now. And that was the high. And then it corrected through the summer and a little rally into September and then crashed. And every one of the great bubbles since have crashed in the fall.
The one proviso, I would point to a couple of sole survivors from the internet bubble. The reason for the tulip mania is tulips at the time did not breed true. So you weren't sure what you would get. And even if you had a beautiful bulb, you weren't sure if that would actually produce offspring, additional bulbs that would then make you a fortune. The difference, I think, this time, just like in the internet space .com before the .bomb days, you had a handful out of the hundreds of IPOs in that space, and they all went belly up, and we could name Ask Jeeves and so many, or they were absorbed by the big guys, Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Amazon. I'm going to refer to Bitcoin as the Google. Now, they suffered for quite a while, but they resumed their uptrend and are now up tenfold, 20-fold, 100-fold from where they were at their IPO days. You're seeing the Google, you're seeing the Yahoo, you're seeing the Microsoft, the Netscape. Many will close up shop. Many will be just tokens by the side of the road. Well, all of a sudden, we heard last week, Litecoin shot up because Coinbase, the exchange, decided to start trading it, and everyone in China and Singapore had instantaneous access to Litecoin for the first time. And there is one other interesting difference here. Again, the functionality of Ethereum, which is now its position to eclipse dips Bitcoin. It was trading at $9 when I was buying it just a few months ago. It's on its way to 9,000. Voting rights, there is increases or decreases in the outstanding float of the coin. That's the tulip that could eclipse even Bitcoin.
Okay, now I sent you the one on the Bitcoin bubble versus gold, Shanghai, and silver. And just to look at the gold and counting the big swings on the way up, we're kind of the equivalent, about 600 on gold in 1980 on the way to 800. Lost itself and then crashes. And, you know, on the way down on these things.
Bitcoin from 2013 to 2017 embedded right next to gold, 73 to 80. So you see two bubbles. But the difference, I would contend that Bitcoin is unshortable. Gold, the central banks now really have virtually all the control because they control the physical and they control the paper. The reason why it's going to 100,000 is that the powers that be are not aware of this yet. They're starting to wake up. I'm sure you read that Vladimir Putin of Russia just met with the Ethereum founder because he wants a Russian cryptocurrency.
Cryptocurrencies is that nobody can short them.
The IPOs, there was no float to short. Only the big underwriter could short. That wasn't in their best interest in most cases. So you saw these tulips fly. Well, today, there's virtually no underwriter because what's happened is it's the founders and the small cadre, Silicon Valley startup-like environment in a garage somewhere. They have the entire float. Until that is released, tulip days are here again.
The other things I'll leave you with, Chris, is that any speculation that's done on borrowed money, somewhere out there is lending, borrowing short and lending long. Watch the yield curve in China.
Yes, you're right.
It'll keep going so long as the speculation, but the moment the curve will begin to change, maybe a week or so before the price on whatever is being speculated in. So, and then the other one is the gold-silver ratio. It can change. Well, as a matter of fact, it's been rising, which suggests that whatever the big speculation is now, becoming vulnerable. But when? You never know. This thing could run for months.
Bob, tell people more about why they really must get a hold of your information. And plus, I promise to post this link of the updated Bitcoin bubble versus gold, Shanghai, and silver.
Yeah, you can run that chart. Yeah, it's institutionaladvisors.com, or you can actually just Google my name, Bob Hoy, and it all comes up. And I can say that our work is very reliable. We put in accolades and kudos on the front page of our on the home page of our site, and we've got them from some people in the business, Jim Grant, Grant's Interest Rate Advisor, stuff like that. So we're pleased with the work that we do, and we're pleased to share it for our subscription fee. So
well, hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Very good, thank you, Chris. Anytime. Look forward.